Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details. At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details. At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we're back to talk about the offense in this big Christmas Day win against the Texans. Ought to be a lot of fun. Joining me to do it is Alec Boulianos. Alec, how you doing?
Doing great, Ken. Great to talk to you again.
Yeah, hope you had a great Christmas with your family and whatnot. A newly minted daughter this year.
That's right.
Who's doing very well and getting around and probably starting to be more trouble this year.
A lot more trouble recently, for sure. Yeah, she's moving around quite well and yeah, getting into things. So it's fun, but it's cool to watch those gears work and her learn new things. It's incredible. Sometimes you're like, wow, I don't know how you learned that, but you learned it.
All right, let's move back to the game here. Fantastic day for Lamar Jackson, a kind of a magical performance for him, propelled himself back into the MVP discussion. I don't honestly think there was any reason why he should have ever left, but the Ravens winning the division does improve the case, I think, for him to win the MVP award, and the Ravens have been through a three-week series of advances against the Pittsburgh Steelers, which has just been very wonderful to watch.
It's great to be back in control of the AFC North as it was always meant to be, you know, and it was one of those funny things. I remember you were talking about the betting markets. It was at 34% and you know, it looked like a tricky thing, but it definitely was in the range of outcomes. And I just kind of always felt like this is how it was going to play out. Like we would get back into having our destiny, but like you had to see it actually happen. Right. So great to see them lose some games and us to win the games we needed. That Pittsburgh game, the way they won it so competently and confidently, I think really changed the tenor around the team for many fans. And yeah, it's great to see. It's a good time to be a Baltimore fan.
So we just saw the Chargers blast the Patriots today.
Correct.
40-7 or thereabout. It was a one-sided affair. And then we also saw the Steelers look like crap for the third straight game against the Chiefs. Do you have a strong feeling about who you want to see the Ravens face in the playoffs? Because it being a home game, the most likely two now are the Chargers and the Steelers. And I'm not sure I'm all that excited about it being either of those.
Correct. I would say I would prefer the Chargers just because of history with the Steelers and Tomlin knowing us so well. I think we have the best of Jim, frankly. We've always gotten him, so to speak. And I just don't think they have the star power. You know, they played quite well against New England, but you have to consider the opponent and the way they've drafted recently and just the personnel that they're fielding.
My understanding from listening to Bills fans, you don't have to consider the opponent.
Oh, that's right.
It's really the opponent doesn't matter. And the fact that they had a winning record is not important. But please continue with this stray thread you're working on here.
Yeah, I think I mean, frankly, of those two, we should beat either, right? And, you know, assuming, you know, take care of business and you win the AFC North. But I don't love it. Like, you think to yourself, oh, if we were just the fifth seed, we get to play Houston again, and they're not a real team. You know, I'd rather play either of those, that option, particularly with all their injuries. But, oh, well. It's going to be one of those things where the fourth seed's actually worse than the seventh seed, most likely this year.
Yeah, could certainly be the case. Now, the Ravens still have a you know, an opportunity to get the AFC Championship game at home that is not zero. So it's not great necessarily, but it's not zero if they get that three seed, which makes it, you know, I want the home game. I want one home game at least for being a season ticket holder. The thing that bothers me maybe most coming up is the snap of cold weather that appears headed for most of the Eastern Seaboard. And, you know, potential with high wind potential as well. We're talking about wind chill factors in zero, near zero in Baltimore for, I think it was through the 12th of January. So that you know, and that's probably a worst case scenario, but still that would not be a good outcome.
Right. I think the Ravens run offense is really predicated on the pass offense being able to be a viable yes. threat. I don't think we're actually that dominant of an offensive line. And when it's kind of annoying. I feel like the gotta have it downs are tough because if they think you're running, we haven't had the best success in those moments. Just because, I don't know. I think we just aren't that kind of run team.
They've been decent on third and fourth down, but in terms of any gotta have it, it only gives you one opportunity sometimes or two if you go on third and fourth down. But yeah, I guess
what it means for me is, like, I don't know. Sometimes there's such a, I hate when they are like, okay, we're going to just hand it off. Like, we don't have Lamar Jackson mm-hmm. as the quarterback, you know, and it's just not that deceptive. They just ram it up the gut and then it gets stopped and you're like, well, yeah. It wasn't very creative, was it? Yeah. Was that really the best play you had for third down? But that's what my nits with the offense. I feel like they sometimes are a little too confident that they don't need to pull out all the tricks, so to speak.
Well, Mahomes and Allen are both quarterbacks that have played in a lot of cold weather, and it does worry me about this. But let's get back to Jackson for a second. Outstanding day here. Set up the Ravens to win the division. Eye-popping run and pass plays. You know, that's part of the MVP award, but it's just also part of watching a fun football game is to see him have the 48-yard run, which has already been made into this, I don't know, pop art thing for a Madden cover that we're seeing already. And the two great throws, the one serpentine pattern through the pocket to eventually unload it to Andrews over the shoulder for what became then a great stiff arm and 67-yard catch and run. And also the 11th, you know, indefinite escape time needed to throw a touchdown pass. Okay, it's not that many, but there have been several. And it seems to be always very similar, going towards that right sideline, and it's just he's all of a sudden uncatchable.
Yeah, I wanted to see Mark get that touchdown, and you know, got caught from behind. It was a little disappointing. I'm glad they got a touchdown later on, but you know, at least he didn't rob us of seeing that likely play, you know, and it's, you have to give credit to Likely too, knowing how to orchestrate and run after, you know, do the scramble drill and find his ways open. Like the connection that these guys have, their ability to improvise and get open is also one of the reasons that Lamar is so successful with it.
Right. And the separation numbers that we hear about all the time also are part Lamar in terms of him waiting for separation to occur, because there's probably no quarterback who requires that to happen to his sight than Lamar. So he's not just throwing a guy open, which he can do. He's more waiting for a guy to demonstrate his openness on, say, a crossing route or something where he's fading deep. Those passes and the separation that occurs because of that, that's not just the receivers getting that. That's Lamar, you know, setting up those plays.
I wonder if the reason Lamar does that is because of all these years, you know, playing the game, he is so confident in his ability to extend a play that he'd rather wait for that mm-hmm. separation than take what he can get, so to speak. And he's just a little extra greedy in that way. Yeah, I never really thought about it that way, but I think he might be a little greedy just because he knows that he can extend the play and lean into that.
It's appropriate greed. And you know, part of the thing is I would like to see a few more on schedule throws per game from Lamar just to show he can do it, just to show it to opposing offensive coordinators and have them throw up their arms and say, oh, how do we stop this? Now we got to figure out. He might throw a slant. You know, we never counted on that, you know, kind of thing. Or right. So I'd love to see a few more on schedule plays. I don't think he'll ever be a quarterback where you have a Flacco to Mason 10-yard curl is part of the, you know, every other first down that you want to throw up, that you want to throw a pass. It's that pass. Anyway, it'll never be the entire thing, but it would be nice to see him do a little bit more of that. But I also kind of create an analogy to that and playing post-flop poker versus pre-flop poker. So if you Texas Hold'em, you know, most people know the rules of the game, and I'm not going to try to teach people who don't know right now. I'm just going to use the metaphor. You can look it up and see what this means. Weak players, one thing that they have amongst them all is they have a pretty good understanding of how they should play pre-flop to get their money in properly and maximize the amount of money they can get in pre-flop. Great players understand how to put pressure on their opponents and read them and do other things that help them win hands after the flop. And a lot of that is going to be, setting up a bluff over two streets, for example, or doing the other things. Anyway, that's what Lamar Jackson does really well. He can beat you anywhere after that flop occurs like nobody's business. And he doesn't try and beat you pre-flop, which is what I think of kind of on schedule passing as being, you know, take that thing. And, you know, take what you can get with Lamar Jackson. I mean, look at Lamar Jackson's, you know, dangerousness. Does that seem like a great thing ever to get his mindset into?
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's that's a good analogy. I like that.
Yeah. I thought some of the fun stuff with the kid in the hat was funny after he left the game. Yeah. you know, obviously that kid, I knew someone who got a signature from Joe Namath on his t-shirt when he's 12 years old. And he said, I bet you didn't wash that. I said, I bet you didn't wash that t-shirt. And he goes, I bet I didn't take it off the rest of the summer. but I think it's that kid will appreciate that hat for the rest of his life. And I thought it was funny. Whoever it was handed him that huge piece of jewelry or whatever, that he hung it around DaCosta's neck and then became DaCosta's responsibility to hold on to that thing for the rest of the game. And he's a good sport about it, and that's what he's got to do. But boy, I know he probably didn't want to do that.
Yeah. I don't know. Sometimes I think DaCosta is down to have some fun. It's really something. He had a little bit of a different demeanor, I feel like, on the sideline this week. You know, he wasn't in his normal suit. He's a little more relaxed at that point.
All right. We had a solid offensive line performance. We'll discuss that a little later as well. But the Ravens really won the battle of the trenches on both sides of the ball. Really expected them to win it on the defensive line against the Texans offensive line, which has a lot of problems, a lot of discontinuity, a lot of moving parts, incredible number of injuries. But the defensive line actually for the Texans is fairly healthy. And it's probably their defense is certainly the better part of their team, and their defensive line is probably the healthiest group. They've got some injuries at safety with Petrie and who's the other one that's injured as well. It doesn't really matter. Again, but anyway, on the defensive line, they didn't really have a lot of problems. Their pass rushers are, you know, a good set of three pass rushers with Barnett and
Will Anderson.
Will Anderson and the other one that I'm forgetting here, number 55.
Daniel
Hunter.
Daniel, sorry. Yeah, not Daniel.
Yeah. I've done the same thing before. I've wanted to call him Danielle. It's just one of those things. You know, his parents really did not give him a great name. He's probably okay with it by now. And you know,
sometimes the autocomplete messes you up, right?
Probably not good. But anyway, the one that won both sides of the football game, we saw two teams that were coming off with some injury issues coming into the week. The Ravens, they were ready to play this football game, both from an injury perspective. They got as healthy as they could. Didn't have Justice Hill. That kind of sucked. Didn't have Nelson Aguilar still. That kind of sucked. But they had Falele, and they had
Flowers.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So and they hit somebody else too, who was on the questionable list, who returned, and they were generally, I think, about as healthy as you could expect a team to be at this time of the season, period. So good to look. They really looked like a team on a mission in this game.
They are having a good bout of health. Hope it continues throughout the rest of the season. It was something that I was just talking about with Jason from Huddle It Up Films. He was saying that this year he doesn't have that many players to highlight because there just haven't been that many injuries. So it's the same guys, you know?
Yep.
So it's keeping his life a little easy.
Well, there you go. Looking forward to a home playoff game. It is what I want, but I am a little, I'm really like asking myself right now, would it just have been better to get the four seed with what I'm seeing on the weather map coming up and go down to Houston and play that first game? Would have definitely been at least one game under the best possible weather circumstances for the playoffs that are available in the AFC. Cause you only got three places you can play on wild card weekend.
Yeah.
And Baltimore ain't going to be one of the good ones. And Buffalo ain't going to be one of the good ones. And Houston is going to be the good one. Mm-hmm. And they can't go there now. But there is an advantage to not going to Houston, by the way. And it's a pretty big one. If you go to Houston, you might play the very first game in a 4-5 game on the first day of the playoffs, that's obviously favorable. Even though you have to play on a short week and the Texans get to play on a longer week and maybe they're more rested this next time, still, I'll take that. But the other thing is, if you don't, if you get a 4-5 seed, you can end up playing in the Monday Night Football game. And my understanding, and this is new to me, I did not know this was true, is that the Monday Night game has to be a 4-5 game. Because they have to allow as much travel as possible to have been decided by the time the Monday night game is ready to go. So your 4-5 won't flip anybody in terms of where somebody's going by seeding, but your 3-6, for example, might, because because if you're 4 wins in the middle, then it doesn't matter. Whoever among your 4-5 wins, your 3 or 6 will go to a different spot based on who wins and change travel. So I found that very interesting. And that is an enormous disadvantage to either the 4 or 5 seed each year. And it's also, when you think about the Texans complaining, basically, that they always seem to get the first Saturday game, I'm like, they just got the biggest break in, you know, recorded history to play 2 days earlier at home for the first game of the playoffs.
Right. I didn't know that either about the Monday night game, but it does make sense. Gotta love that, you know, even the playoffs, we have to make all the money possible and introduce these unfairness things. You know, maybe it should just be AFC on Saturday, NFC on Sunday, you know, right, throughout the whole playoffs, make it very even, Steven, but oh well. Can't have nice things. Yeah, okay. That's good to know. I didn't know that either. And I'm glad that the Ravens might comfortably miss that decision.
Yeah. So they should be playing on either Saturday or Sunday. And looking at the Rich Eisen show, he thinks it'll be the Sunday night game, which I'm thinking about might be pretty good. If you can't get teams up for a playoff game, I don't know when you can. But Harbaugh's good record of night games and whatnot, I like the chances, you know, the skill he has shown in getting a team ready to play in prime time as opposed to at some other normal time during the game, like 1 p.m.
Gotcha. Well, we'll see what happens. I'm good that weekend. Everything's blocked off. I was taking a look.
All right. You'll be there one way or another, right?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not selling those tickets.
Very good. All right. So we saw Cincinnati win tonight in a weird fashion. And, you know, some things happened in that game you probably don't completely agree with, including scoring maybe a touchdown a little bit more too quickly at the end of regulation, ending up paying for it when the Denver Broncos moved down the field and scored with a few seconds left to tie it up again. I think Cincinnati is honestly kind of lucky that they didn't decide to go for two.
Yeah.
I mean, that's an area where you really might. And they're on the road. It seemed to make some sense in a variety of ways, but they didn't. And then Cincinnati ended up winning it in overtime after what, another exchange of crapola, right? York missed a short field goal in overtime.
Yep. Yeah, it was one of the wackier games I've seen in a while. Yeah. Felt like it should have been over multiple times, and it wasn't. And the Bengals got a lot of lifelines. They got lucky. I feel like they made some mistakes, like you mentioned with the time. Chase went down. He knew the assignment and got hurt, though, so they had to call the injury timeout on their side instead of the other side. And I understand changing the math, right? And I can understand why they would feel like they should score a touchdown, but I believe that they should have at least made them burn a timeout first.
And their only timeout at that.
Right.
And then you got to score entire distance of the field and
no time.
Maybe a minute and 10 or less.
Right. Right. Because you could still have done the same play, the same push play. Frankly, you could just do a QB sneak and not push, right? The first play.
Right.
And then the second play, you'd be a little bit more serious about it. And then hope for the best or, do another play, whatever you want to do. And then you can field goal if you don't get that on the fourth down. I thought it was a mistake, a huge mistake. But that's what they did. That's what they chose to do.
I don't know if you were over at my house when this happened. I know we had folks over, but the couple of years ago, the Browns and the Chargers played a game where the Chargers wanted to kneel it and not score, and the Browns dragged the guy into the end zone.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
They tried to do that in the Chase play, right? Chase Brown, they almost tried to drag him over. They knew the design as well. So it was just one of those funny things.
So, all righty. All right. Well, anyway, some people say, don't get Cincinnati into the playoffs. You don't know what you're asking for. I kind of do know what I'm asking for. I'd rather have Cincinnati at home than either the Chiefs or the Bills on the road. And I will stand by that decision for time immemorial here, I think. If it ends up being the wrong one, there's been a few of those lifetime, but it doesn't mean it was the wrong decision. It means it's the wrong outcome.
Process
in
results.
All likelihood. Yeah.
Yeah. I agree with that. The Bengals are a scary team. They're definitely the better of the, they're the best 7 seed that we can get. It just might not work out that way. As far as causing some trouble in the playoffs, they're your hope of knocking out a Bills or a Chiefs. Either one, right?
I would not see Denver doing it, and I would not see, could Pittsburgh knock off the Chiefs in a divisional round? Maybe.
I'll take the Bengals. You know what I mean?
Take the Bengals for sure.
You have to skew towards offense, man. It is the way the league is, which I don't love, but it's the truth.
All right, let's jump on to some other more general offensive notes. The Ravens won the snap count in this one, 61-54. The second straight week, I thought one of the interesting things about this game was they really benefited from this low-intensity surrender that was done at the end of the game. So they got some good brother-in-law play for almost the last, 6 to 8, 9 minutes of the game, with the Texans out of it.
Yeah.
D'Amico Ryans ended up being an adult. So they've had McDermott, an adult, Tomlin, an adult, Ryans, an adult, and Bowles, not so much. Decided he wanted to go for it. And by the way, McCarthy went for it with Dallas with these multiple onside kicks. And, but the problem with that is it was kind of working. So it's very hard to point at that and say, well, that's wrong, soon as they start collecting onside kicks. But, Tomlin and McDermott never let it get to that point where they were into the, trying to get onside kicks collected phase of a game.
Yeah, you're asking for a lot at that point. Particularly the Texans, they had nothing to play for, right? They've been locked and loaded in that fourth seed for the longest time. So it didn't really make sense for them to push it. I mean, they've already experienced so much loss and so much injury that's riddled their season and ruining their chances, frankly. I think they were an interesting team trying to make a push at the beginning of the season, and then it kind of all fell apart on them. So that's too bad. Maybe they'll be a little bit better off next year, but it doesn't look like it's their year with everything that's going on. And understanding that frankly, you're playing for next year too, right? it's the playoffs. I doubt that they go down super duper easy, but it wouldn't shock me that even in a playoff game, if the fifth seed's beating them up, they just fold it in. You know, like an ACL is an ACL, and that'll knock them out for a large part of the next year too.
Right. Gotcha. So yeah, it's, I can't say I've really seen it done often in the playoffs, but it can be. You can have another quarterback in there if your primary is beat up. There are people in Houston already calling for a quarterback change, which is to me absurd. There are also people in Houston calling for a coaching change, which is at least in the same ballpark of absurd as I think. So we'll see how that plays out. But my old college broadcast partner seems to think that Bobby Slowick is in danger. Yes. But not D'Amico Ryans, who's in the second year and has already been very successful in his head coaching run here.
If I recall, Bobby was a big name when Roman got fired. Munkin turned out to be quite the acquisition. So yeah, good for us.
good call. Another good thing about this game that showed up again was that no field was too long for the Ravens. The Ravens had a 99-yard touchdown drive here. Was that their 10th or the 11th? Of the year. So anyway, the second highest in the entire NFL is 5.
Yeah.
So this was either number 10 or they had 10 and this was number 11, one or the other. And the second highest is 5. It's just this very reminiscent of the 2019 Ravens and the 2007 Patriots. They both had that characteristic of like no field was too long. And, you know, giving a team like that a long field, I felt that way about Chiefs teams too in the Mahomes era. When you give a team a field that long, you risk really tiring your defense. And it means you have to change your fourth down strategy at midfield. I mean, fourth and 5 at midfield, you better go for it because there's not a whole lot of point in giving up a team a 95-yard field if it's very easy for them to get the first 45 yards of that.
Yeah.
And
yeah, I mean, it is impressive, their ability to not be fazed by it. Obviously, they had the safety. Mm-hmm. That was the one blemish of the whole game. And so it's not bulletproof, but they are really good at getting themselves out of it. You know, it only takes one play. It takes, you know, one or two plays and you feel comfortable and then you keep moving. And it's kind of like any other drive at that point. But like you said, I think that's an interesting point. These longer drives are an opportunity to really tire out a defense and wreck them for the rest of the game. Yeah. So, you know, that's a big part of it too. I didn't really think about that, but you're right.
Ravens got a little bit too explosive on the drive, largely with the 67-yard play and, you know, a couple of big runs by Henry there to move the ball pretty quickly down the field. But it could have been a lot worse than it was. Mm-hmm. I did want to talk about a couple of the things that came out of this run of games, though. The Texans and Steelers, all the games they had to play, seemed to have some common characteristics coming out of the 0-3s that they each had. The first is that I think both teams are genuinely unhappy with being asked to play 3 games in 11 days. That they're pissed about it. They're not going to say it directly. They don't want to seem unmanly, but they don't appreciate being having to play 3 games in 11 days. I don't think they appreciate putting the schedule originally. I know I didn't for the Ravens. I thought it was a very bad thing, particularly with the third game being on the road. If the third game is at home, I actually probably feel differently about it, by the way. Mm-hmm. I would have been a bit happier. But the other thing is there's a lot of finger pointing now going on those teams. And it shows you just how little has to go wrong for NFL teams to start eating their own. But all the stuff about 10 men are playing and one of them isn't kind of thing has got everybody in Pittsburgh asking the question, who's the guy who's not doing his job?
Mm. Yeah, it was a big ask. The good news is that it was late enough in the season that you had all the time in the world to think about it. Right. And you had all the time in the world to prepare and do whatever you did for the games leading up to it to be in the best spot. I think, frankly, our bye being that late was a huge win because it allowed them to game plan sufficiently for those games. And they weren't, you know, oh, there's 8 of future opponents to think about. No, it was a very small subset of opponents to think about. They knew one of them really well, the Pittsburgh Steelers, and they were able to go out there and execute really well. Another thing I think worked out really well for them is they basically said, let's run it back. They did a very similar game plan. And it was a very effective game plan against the Steelers, and it was effective against Houston. So I think the bye week came at just the right time. They were able to really figure some stuff out. It gives me a lot of confidence. You know, obviously the Giants was a little speed bump to the real meat of the schedule, but yeah, that's, I feel really good about the team right now, and I think they figured a lot out, and they're in one of the best places they could possibly be at this point.
They seem, relative to early in the season too, in a great spot in terms of team unity, where that was a huge problem earlier on. People were clearly uneasy with the situation, but unwilling to say directly who was the problem. And you're left with it. Well, is it Harbaugh? Is it Orr? Is there no oversight for what's going on in defense? Is it possibly the safeties somehow? It can't be Marcus Williams because he's been so good. And yet seems like it was Marcus Williams, Eddie Jackson. They expunged those cancers from the back end, and they're playing a lot better.
This feels like the season that had the most locker room drama and issues and lack of cohesion in the Lamar era. But at the same time, they feel as cohesive and like together at this moment of any team in the Lamar era. Yeah. So the swings have been huge, and it's so good to see the defense playing like the defense we thought they'd be all year long. And frankly, I don't care. Like, I'm glad that they had to figure this all out, right? Yeah. I'm glad that they went through this journey. I'm glad that we're able to have learned so much throughout the season, going through personnel, figuring out what makes the most sense, figuring out what packages and things. You know, it was a big growth, you know, for Orr and the whole team, but they figured it out and they're in a good place now. And that's good. So I don't know. I really have been enjoying the trial by fire that the team's kind of been going through this year, where it wasn't as easy. And things seem to be working out basically as much as you could hope for. Obviously, you know, second or first seed would be even better, but I'm very content with everything right now. And I feel like this team is right where we want them to be as far as having a good playoff push.
Yeah. They've overed my expectations in terms of even where they are on defense alone. And it was a triple crown defense last year, but right now I think they're back to one of the top five defenses in the NFL, could be top three. And the last six games, they played so well in terms of holding opposing quarterbacks, and it's five playoff teams, even though, you know, it's two Wilsons in there, for example. And a debilitated Stroud, it seems. You still held five playoff teams and the Giants as well under their expectation for yardage for each of those games, given the opportunity set. And the opportunity sets have not been terrible or anything from this defense. They've been, you know, consistently generating a fair amount of sacks, not maybe as much pressure as I'd want, which means they're converting more of their pressures. So in one case, I can't help but be a hypocrite on this when it comes up, because for Madubuike last year, he had 13 and a half sacks. And you know, you say, well, that's great for the sack total, but I wish he had as many pressures to support that sack total. I wish he had enough pressures that I could feel confident that sack total might be repeated. Well, first of all, it's probably never going to happen if you're an interior lineman, that you're going to really have the number of pressures necessary to do that. And if you do, it's going to be for someone like Aaron Donald. It's not going to be for Madubuike. But the other ones were like Van Noy and Owe are now in very good positions of stacks as a percentage of total pressure, even though Owe's pressure numbers are off this year. So his pressure rates are off, not insignificantly. Yeah. And he's still converting more of those, which seems pretty damn nice.
Yeah. A lot of things are going right. And it all took some time to get there. I think the thing that's impressive about the defense right now, before we go back to the offense, which is another point of the show, but I have this confidence right now with them where I'm like, I don't think teams are scoring more than 20 on us. And it's complimentary football, right? I think the offense is good enough to have longer drives and get you in a situation where the defense is at an advantage state. So I just feel like they're most likely going to keep people under 20 or like right at 20. And therefore, I think our offense is going to score more than 20. So it feels really nice. You know, like that's kind of where I'm at with the team. So it's a good combination.
Let me put that another way, maybe. And it's slightly different, but I think it comes back to the complementary football component. When you have two things that you're trying to work on as improvements, okay? And this may be something you get on your review from your manager, or something you have to give to an underperforming employee or someone else. You just want to do well, and you can't give them 13 things to work on at the same time. That's not actually relevant here because you can work on both offense and defense at the same time to do this.
I get what you're saying, though.
But as fans, let's talk about this for a moment. The minutia of how the Ravens offense can be improved and made slightly more efficient from their current state. Oh, we need to get Deontay Johnson because that's what it'll take to get over the hump. You can't play in the playoffs without three wide receivers, or they've got to make that change at right guard finally and get Ben Cleveland in there for Fa'alele, which, by the way, I think right now is never going to happen because Fa'alele just had a really good game as I scored it. But we've got to make this, you know, change at one position to solidify the offensive line. Those right. are actually very micro changes to a very smoothly operating machine that won't have a very significant impact on things. The Hamilton change, moving him back to free safety, that's a light switch. That's going on and off from night to day, basically, mm-hmm. in terms of how the defense performs.
Yep, it truly was.
Always easier to fix the thing that is more broken. and when you do, you get a lot more gain from it too. So, you've got that employee who you like, you want to keep, and he's not performing. Try and really get him focused on that one thing he really needs to fix. And even though there's 11 things he needs to fix, there can only be one until he fixes that makes any difference.
And that's why I think the Bengals are dangerous, right? Yeah. Like, it's the same idea. Their defense was horrendous. This is the reason they're in this position. Well, it's a lot easier to make the defense less horrendous and get it to okay, to mm-hmm. not that bad. And then the offense is still clicking, and then you suddenly have a very competitive team. So I think that's why they're, for the longest time, I thought they were underperforming, scared. Like,
at Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details. At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details. At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
They could still be scary if they figured out the defense, and it wasn't that there wasn't players on that team that could figure things out. Like, it's not the Patriots. You know what I mean? Like, there are more high quality players there to use.
Well, they could definitely hurt or help the Ravens if they go in and beat the Steelers next week. The Ravens probably end up with the Steelers. And I think the Steelers have they have the head-to-head tiebreaker for both the Chargers and Denver. So they would end up finishing ahead of Denver at the least, probably tying them, but it could win outright as well. And that would leave them with the five seed in all likelihood. So we'll see how that ends up playing out. I'm kind of torn about the situation, but I think it generally would be good to have a better early round opponent for both Buffalo and Kansas City potentially. All right. This is a Ravens team that came in number one in DVOA on defense. And they left the game. Aaron Schatz put out a quote about this, that they're still number one, even though the margin is narrowed. They're just a little bit ahead of Minnesota now before they were, 2 or 3 percentage points ahead. I didn't get a new number on the Ravens. I asked him, but he didn't respond. But those numbers should be out, I think, on Monday, late Monday. And it should show, I think, a pretty significant gain for the Ravens defense after this game against Houston.
Nice. Yeah, unfortunately, those have gone behind the paywall sometime in the middle of the season here. So I don't still have access to all the numbers other than what he tweets out. But good to hear that the Ravens' offense is good, number one to Villa. That feels correct.
But it's number three all time through 16 games.
Nice.
All time. Any and they go back to 79, but it's still very impressive. And the teams that are ahead of them are like the 2007 Patriots.
Yeah.
And one other I'm forgetting right now, but they're both super hyper impressive offenses. So it's a good thing. Oh, you can do a whole bunch of stat crunching right now about the Baltimore Ravens and be happy about this team.
Correct.
So a little bit of a reversal in this game, most of it due to one play, but the recent story of the Ravens passing game has been that a high percentage of their yards have come in the air. This was back to a high percentage yak game, largely because of the 67-yard catch and run by Andrews, which only went about 15 in the air. But they had 63% of their yards by yak this week. And it was about 37% last week, and it's 50% roughly on the season. So been a little bit of a back and forth, and you can see why it would be dependent on some individual plays. But this was a game where receivers did a good job after the catch. Mitchell being another one. Yeah,
Mitchell, man. Good to see him back in action. Disappointed it took Ali getting hurt to see him come in, because he seems to me to be who I thought he'd be at this point. You mm-hmm. know, Keaton feels like a weapon that could be useful. And I hope that he starts getting activations over Ali when Justice is available again. And
unfortunately, I think Ali is hurt. He left the game, and it showed up in the game book that Ali is out for the remainder of the game, kind of thing. So
correct. Yeah, I don't know what his status is for the future of the season, but yeah, we'll see. Hopefully, you know, Keen's able to step up and make us not have to worry about Ali's health. But yeah,
it very well could be a place where the Ravens need to go out and get a running back from the street, because I don't know who they have on the practice squad anymore. They had John Kelly there they were using, and they've had some other players, but it hasn't,
I think, long gone.
Yeah, so. Collier's gone, yeah.
Yeah, so they'll have to find somebody for sure if he is hurt. You can't be that thin on the whole organizational level. I guess we'll see what happens there.
Let's talk a little bit more about Lamar's performance, because I've got all kinds of per drive stats and things like that, but I'll share them via Twitter, I think, at a later time. The Texans seem to be defending Lamar differently from the Steelers. So the Steelers look like they were going after Lamar no matter what on a lot of plays, or making their decision maybe before the play would be the way to put it. But these Texans defenders seem to be making their reads one at a time. I think the Ravens did key in on that. That did lead to some bad decisions. Of course, the Steelers made a lot of bad decisions that created room for Henry. But Lamar, still the best at reading that opposing leverage and figuring out what they're trying to do to against him.
Yes, he is. He is definitely still the best. I thought it was interesting that they weren't going after him on a lot of the run plays. And it still was, you know. They still couldn't stop Henry. I mean, I thought, frankly, that was the most impressive part of the game, is the effectiveness of the Henry run game, and against what is relatively a good defense. And the way it opened up, I don't know about you, Ken. I don't like to call these things over before, you know, too early. But after the first, like, couple of drives, I was just like, oh, this is going to be a long day for the Texans. look like they had the fight.
I mean, they didn't even really – they did get one 25-yard run out of Lamar, which was also a run out of pressure. So pass play, they got the pressure they wanted. Lamar runs them out of it for 25 yards, not just for four or something. And then all the rest of that drive, basically in terms of the gains, was Henry runs for,
10
big chunks at a time.
Right. Yeah. The efficiency of this team was astronomical.
Yep.
During the competitive portion of the game.
Yeah, exactly. That's a good way to put it, because when they decided that it would not be competitive the last two drives, they throttled back a lot in terms of competitiveness. But on those first nine drives, they scored, 31 points? So that's 3.4 per drive, which is good. but it could have even been better probably than that if they'd been trying, particularly on the next to last drive.
Correct.
All right. So let's talk a little bit about pass rush numbers. Houston sent 4-7 times for 70 yards, 10.0 yards per play, 5-7 times for 94 yards, 13.4 yards per play. They did get a sack in that group. And then 6 they sent once, it was just a 1 yard completion, and 7 they sent once, which was an incomplete pass. 4.75 pass rushers per play. We just saw the Steelers use 5.17 the previous week. Mm. So I'm impressed by a couple things here. First of all, they didn't really get away with rushing 4 or 5. They tried a couple of times to rush 6 or 7, and it seemed to work in a very small sample size, but I kind of wonder why they didn't try and rush that more. And then the opportunity set that they gave Lamar with that was still pretty damn good. And they used a somewhat high amount of set and chip blockers, but not it would almost be justified by the 4.75.
Yeah. Yeah, I think a lot of teams are scared to blitz in super high numbers against the Ravens because they respect Lamar. Mm-hmm. And I get it. I think this is the prime example of the pick your poison narrative, that 4 wasn't getting it done at all. 5 was even slightly worse. and then 6 and 7, they were just like, yeah, in the sample size, it looks okay. But I mean, you could try. I don't think it'd be a good idea either. That just feels like a great way to get some of that yak we were talking about, even more yak in this game.
Yeah.
I think their linebackers, to me, felt like the liability. And then, yeah. So I guess if they're rushing, they're not in coverage, but still. I definitely think they were probably in a bad place no matter what. And it's interesting, though, because I feel like the one advantage you might get when you blitz a higher number of people, and mattering on how you blitz them, right, is that you might be able to better contain Lamar. You know, if he gets past you, then it's very, very bad, obviously. But I guess they might be able to contain a little bit better. But, yeah, it's I don't know if they'll be able to blitz with the higher numbers effectively either.
Yeah, the Bengals in the first game used all that simulated pressure. They basically were willing to blitz more from the line of scrimmage. The Steelers used very two-thirds of 5+ in the game, so they were very aggressive about their blitz. I can't say it, you know, completely worked for them either, though they did force interception out of Lamar in that game. This opportunity set, frankly, given 4.75 rushers per play, that was pretty good. So they had 5 ample time and space opportunities. Now, all I'm looking at is Lamar's passes, because for a couple of reasons. First of all, by the time Josh Johnson came in the game, the Ravens weren't even really trying in the same way anymore. Mm-hmm. And neither were the Texans. So there's not a lot of point in it. Plus the quarterback and how he penalizes you for, you know, creating an opportunity for him is not able to do the same things in Josh Johnson. But they had 5 ample time space among the 16 times that Lamar was in there. I have it as 5 of 18 is what I'm counting, but it's really 5 of 16 for Lamar. Should be about 31%. Nothing too terrible with that. He was 4 out of 5 complete for 54 yards, 10.8 yards per play. They had 7 ball out quick opportunities. That's 39%. He went 5 of 7 on those for 47 yards. 6.7 yards per play. That's also pretty good. And then so there's a consistency to this. There were 4 pressures, and he only completed 1 of 4 against pressure, but it was for the 67-yard throw and a 3-yard sack. So 16 yards per play, as that turns out. That's amazing against pressure. Not quite the best Lamar's ever had, but it's pretty darn close.
Yeah, that's pretty funny. Tremendous. This is extremely playable. I think the most impressive number to me is the ample time and space, in a way. Mm-hmm. Just so efficient. Like, he makes those opportunities hurt for the defense, and that's, I think, what's hugely important, because you don't get him all the time.
Yeah, and he's been very good about it this year, but he's been really, honestly, he's been good at every category. It's almost like ball out quick is the one which takes away the Lamar component, the Lamar factor of being able to wait, boom. But he's been good, and he's been good in every one of them. The overall, and this is, it's not a big high game for Lamar, but this is why this has got him back in the MVP voting, by the way. 165 net yards. His expectation for the 16 dropbacks he had, 99 yards. So he improved. He improved on that by 66 yards. That's 4.1 yards per play better than his expectation in this game.
Wow, that's outrageous. Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing that's funny, right? You look at it, and obviously he had the good rushing game. He broke the record and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But you look at the numbers, and you might think to yourself, "This is another ho hum Lamar Jackson game." But nothing is ho hum with him, like. The only reason he's not the MVP front runner, in my opinion, is he has the like Michael Jordan problem, right? Like, we can't just keep giving it to this guy, can we? Mm-hmm. and maybe you can, but he's just superb, and I can't, you know, I liked Lamar coming out. I was so excited when we drafted him. I had no idea what we were getting ourselves into.
Sure,
like, you know, it's one of those funny things where like it's completely exceeded expectation. It's incredible.
All right. Next gen, the time to throw metric for him this week. And you know it's going to be skewed because he had the one really long one, and that's going to increase all of it. But 3.67 seconds time to throw on average. It's absurd.
Yeah.
He's a mild, relatively mild, 4.1% above expected completion percentage. So some nice figures from the next gen folks. Just see the question I asked next gen again for the, I don't know, the 20th. It's not the 20th time. It's probably literally the third time I've asked them this question. And I keep getting the same answer. And maybe discussing it might make us feel better about it for about 2 seconds because you're a tech guy and I'm a quant. And each of us is going to see the ridiculousness in the answer I got. Okay.
Yeah.
So I asked them, can you tell me how top speed is calculated? Because I want to know about the Lamar 21.25 miles per hour. And I said, specifically, over what interval do you measure the top speed? And I said, for instance, I've seen Big Data Bowl and it's been tenths of a second, but maybe it's four because you want to somehow smooth the top speed over a longer period of time. And I got back an answer that was direct. He thought he was definitely getting to the answer, but he said, no, what you're talking about is sustained speed. Our speed is calculated instantaneously from the accelerometer, which tells us his top speed was 21.25 miles per hour. Well, I'm new here, but I'm not a rookie on fucking earth, okay? And I'll tell you this, that anytime you're calculating speed, it's distance over time. If you've got a new way to do it, we've got some great work to do on the space-time continuum problems we have in general. Okay, whatever we want to solve, we can do it. If you've got another magic formula that works to calculate speed. So so when I asked the guy that, I had to kind of respond without being mean, because that's not the spirit of what I was trying to do. I'm just saying, you know, can you, this might require more thing, but he basically gave me an answer. Is I look on the odometer, it says what his speed is, or, you know, on the speedometer, I look, it says what his speed is. And I put that over here in the post, and then I hit send. And that was just not a very good answer. So anyway, I asked the question again and say, this may require, you know, someone with knowledge of how the accelerometer, which by the way is a hilarious name for the thing, is actually programmed, is to say, how is it dividing out, you know, that yeah, speed over what period of time is it done? So anyway, I didn't get a very satisfactory answer, and I thought it was actually hilarious. But the only guy who's going to find it hilarious is probably you. And, you know, we do have a STEM audience, though. So
yeah, I think a lot of your audience would find it funny. Instantaneous speed is not a thing. Yeah. Or velocity. But thanks for that. Yeah, I have no idea what the sample rate is of that accelerometer and how it all gets transmitted out. I imagine there's some really interesting fuzziness at collisions.
Yes.
You know, I actually might be able to help you out with this, by the way. I'll tell you after the show. I think, sure, I might know somebody who might, okay, be able to actually help you out and get a real answer.
Okay. Well, it's the Big Data Bowl has kind of a hint into it, but I'm wondering, the Big Data Bowl will be maybe a simplification of what's available in the RIFD chips.
Yeah.
So the RFID chips are collecting information, or they're there to transmit, or whatever it might be. But the information is essentially collected based on you know, their position. There may be an ability to collect a lot more information. So maybe a hundredth of a second, it's collected 100 times a second, but it's only every tenth of a second they give you, because the file's already 29 gig or something that they give you through the big data bowl, and they didn't want to make it any bigger.
Sure.
Yeah. Anyway. All right. Did want to talk to you briefly because, hey, this is just a fun thing to talk about. What is a reasonable order of things that you're looking for in the MVP? So I have a number of things, all sorts of noises coming at me in terms of information you have about Lamar and Josh Allen and maybe Joe Burrow after today, who knows, about who might be the MVP. What's the order of things you look at? Take me through yours. I know you can see it, mine on the table. That's fine. Steal whatever you want to from there. But what?
Oh, nice.
What do you think is the order that the typical MVP voter looks at in terms of kind of deciding the MVP?
Oh, now, sorry, at the last minute you said the typical MVP voter. I know
or
what
you,
I look for.
Or you.
Yeah. So
tell me how you do it.
What I look for is really just, I'll use like some of the same terminology of yours. I would say number one to me is just, I guess, like for lack of a better word, like the it factor. If you take this guy out, what does the team look like? Right. And I think it's actually why a lot of skill position players are underappreciated is in these conversations. And because it's a QB, you know, award at this point, right? Is if you take this person out, like how much other stuff just falls apart that doesn't work anymore, right? Most valuable player. Like that's the part that I really think about is maybe the compounding aspect, but then, you know, their ability to win against high quality opponents, their ability to have these obviously memorable plays. But I honestly, stats are like super low for me because they're bogus. Stats are like relatively bogus. I mean, there's so many ways that stats don't tell a full story. It just, you watch the games and you say to yourself, holy cow, like that guy did this. That's kind of the way I look at it. I think I really just think the stats thing is overblown, frankly.
I think it's still a place to start. Honestly,
sure.
I think
it's a good filtering for sure. Yeah. But it doesn't tell you everything. Like that's the whole reason last year when they were saying, you know, obviously it's Allen, look at all of his stats. And I'm like, well, that's why I don't want to now take the Lamar, his stats are better, you know, argument for this.
Allen's stats weren't better last year. I mean, that's the funny thing. All it takes is one loose 18 in there in the wrong column and your stats aren't better overall. That's really all it takes.
Yeah.
But anyway, I think maybe I'll speak for the typical voter first, or what I think the typical voters, you know, organization is. Now, they got all new voters, by the way. By the way, some funny shit is going on with people parading their MVP vote out there. Like I am here to be impressed by whoever plays well these last couple of weeks. I don't know if you know who that is, but it's
I have no idea. I don't pay attention to that.
Truly unimpressive, you know, way to talk about it. But they took it away from some of the beat writers. So I think Zrebeck might have been an MVP voter before. I might be wrong, but I thought he was. And he's not now. Now they have, you know, it's like 50 national guys who are the voters doing it now. So okay. Probably a mistake. They probably gave it to somebody less qualified. So anyway, the first thing I'd say is stats are a pretty good filter. You start, you can get it down to easily four guys that have any possibility of winning it by going by stats only. And if you want to then include people who somebody says, you know what, you're forgetting about so-and-so who should be included. And maybe it's 10 guys, but that's good.
I think you're right. I think the issue is, like, to me, the stats are all like really, really good at that point. Right.
Okay.
They're usually very, very, like, I don't know. I think it isn't the differentiator. It's a good down selector, but I don't think it's the differentiator at the end.
Is it a good place where you can give players who don't deserve the award the ejection seat?
Potentially. I don't know. Okay. Yeah.
I mean, I think if you can't, if you can't get to the point where you where Allen is out because of the 18 interceptions last year, which is clearly what happened. I mean, it's, you know, if you, I think he would have done better in the voting and possibly not won it if his interception number was 7. Okay, but if, yeah. I don't think there's any doubt that the 18 really hurt him in terms of his.
That's awful.
So that's it's one of those things. But I would have said, you know, it's kind of the primary stats too, because there's a whole lot of secondary stats that quants can give you that I think give you a better insight into what this player is doing. And I think, you know, the Lamar effect, for example, is something I don't think is really included in the thing, but it is quantifiable to a certain degree. So it should be something that people ought to be able to look at. But anyway, I'm going to say stats is number one, quality of wins is number two. And you really got to, the 2023 Ravens had a historic quality of wins season where they went 10-4 against teams with winning records. And no team had ever won more than 8 games against teams with winning records prior. That was something that actually might have been 7 even, but it was for sure it was never more than 8. But you know, a new record like that and destroying the good teams that they did, and of course it's during the regular season because they lost to the Chiefs in the AFC Championship, but that had no bearing on the MVP because the voting occurs before then. That was a natural guiding component of the MVP. But you start off, his stats were better than his rate stats anyway were significantly better than Allen anyway. If you're accumulating you know, yards, sure, then a Burrow or an Allen can look better than a Jackson because they have to play in more games where they have to pass late. It's not the Ravens' nature. They win a lot more games big. And
the Lamar Jackson out by the fourth, like when we're talking about Lamar going out in the third, they almost never do it, right? It's always in the fourth. The amount of times I'm like mid third, I don't want to see Lamar Jackson anymore, but he goes out there anyway. It's been a very conservative, you know, play calls. It's absurd. Like, I mean, we're back in the 2019 situation where his stats could even look gaudier if they were forced to, you know, like keep playing, but he's getting pulled out early. We're losing a lot of game.
Yeah. It's, I mean, it might have hurt him in maybe some small way with some voters or something like that. But honestly, Lamar, the whole characteristic his whole time was he didn't have a lot of comeback wins because, let's see, how are we doing in comeback wins this year, by the way? 2 for each quarterback. Or 2 game-winning drives. I don't know if that means comeback wins. I'm not sure if I'm looking at the same thing, but 2 game-winning drives for each player. I think Lamar was hurt by the fact that he was wrapping up a lot of games by halftime. And he had, you know, something like a 24-0 record when leading at halftime. Yeah. So you just have that, you know, you're not going to get a lot of comeback wins. And then he was hurt further by the fact that the Ravens lost some games when they led by 10 points. So that didn't help. And that thankfully hasn't been a big part of the 2024 narrative, even though I guess they led the Raiders by something like that, didn't they?
I don't like to think about that. I can't remember, but sounds right.
All right. So anyway, memorable plays is in there at about number 4 for me. I just think Jackson put so many of those, 3 in this last game. I mean, those are kind of like each an indelible record, and you know, people are going to talk about this MVP award and talk about those plays. And either I was there or I remember we were at Christmas dinner and my dad literally fell out of his chair and blah, 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 and got all wet from his beer. These are, you know, don't want to say the wrong thing here, but you know, you remember where you were sometime on these plays as opposed to tragedies, you know, where we all remember where we were for the Challenger tragedy, for example. So I don't want to compare it to that in any way. But you know, there's just positive things that happen in life too, where you know you remember where you were at the time. You don't remember where you were at the Challenger tragedy because you weren't born yet.
Correct. Yeah. But I remember. Right. I remember 9/11. That's a better one.
There's good. There's 9/11. Perfect. Yeah.
Terrific. 9/11.
Yeah. So yeah, you want to compare it to that.
Yeah.
And then okay. Anyway, I'll do another show on this week. I'm very frustrated with the current MVP discussion and the lack of ability to have any kind of reasonable discourse between groups. I guess I shouldn't expect it, but you know, the easiest thing is usually to disengage, period, when you're on Twitter. Just, it, guy seems like an idiot. Don't respond to him. It's that easy, really. But on the other hand, you know, there's 50 voters out there who I feel like kind of could be reached with the right set of facts to help them get to the right point. I think there's some percentage of those voters who actually have not decided yet.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it is a toss up right now. As far as like the general voting public. Right. So yeah, there's definitely impressionable voters out there.
Okay, let's talk a couple more scheme issues, then we'll just kick it to the second half of the show and get restarted here. Running back snap division was a tough one this week. Henry played 41 snaps. Mitchell came in and played 17, got 11 carries, almost a fourth of what he carried the ball all of last year. Had that great year. You know, we couldn't have wanted him on the field any more we wanted him on the field even more than he was, and then he got hurt. But for him to get 25% of the carries back, I think is a positive thing, even though the yardage result on his runs were not good.
Yeah, no, for sure. I think we can't take too, like the game situation where he ran, I would love to get the split of, again, the competitive versus non-competitive. So I'm not too concerned about it. I think what we saw, there's at least one good vision run, I recall. And then of course the screenplay. Those two things gave me enough juice to be like, okay, like I think there's some meat on this bone.
I'm trying to count this up here. 6, 7, 8, 9. In 9 carries in the fourth quarter. So that should probably put, and that's it. On the last two drives was those 9 carries. So those were as non-competitive as it gets, and that's of his 11 carries in the entire game. Nice little screen to him for 28 yards. Not a nice little caught in the backfield for -6. That was just a play completely blown up by Rosengarten's inability to stop Anderson. But anyway, it was what it was. Henry, all of the running backs just were unbelievably workhorsey when they were in there. Mitchell was targeted or carried the ball on 12 of 17 snaps. Henry on 29 of 41. Ollie was only 1 of 5. So he was just in there for 1 -3 carry, and then he had some other pass blocking stuff he was in for, but that was kind of interesting. I did want to hit on the fact the Ravens had 2.17 heavies per play, which is back at Greg Roman levels. Not quite 2022, but I think this is their heaviest of the season. If it wasn't, it's very close. I didn't go back and check every single game to make sure it was, but they used a lot of 6th offensive linemen in this game. 17 snaps that were non-penalties that went to 6th offensive linemen in this game.
I know, right? Very interesting. They've gotten more committed to that in the last few weeks. Mm-hmm. Don't hate it. I think the other aspect of the high heavies is because of Aguilar being out. I think they're just leaning more into using Legley, and I don't mind that whatsoever. And then, of course, like the last couple last two games, they've wanted to dominate on the ground, or like we're having a good opportunity on the ground. So, you know, just keep milking that cow, so to speak, and keep using some heavies. So I think it makes sense. And it wouldn't shock me even when Aguilar is available again, if they continue down this path, because again, the complementary football aspect cannot be denied. If they're running effectively, it's game over. I'm not worried about Lamar passing. You know what I mean? It's really just comes down to the run game getting going.
We'll see if another team like the Steelers will fall for it. But I think the Ravens are well served to have tried some different things in terms of their blocking schemes against the Texans. But they really were letting some of the defensive linemen into the backfield, not trying to use combination blocks in their typical way, but move up a level with the player who typically would be the back end of a combination block, and instead use a very flat angle block to a trap block, people might have called it in 1968. No, no, they still call it a trap block. But anyway, they did some trap blocking and they did some low angle blocking to do some of those runs, particularly during the scripted plays. So that tells me they really worked on it, even on a short walkthrough, and they really got good effect from it. So some of those early, the first drive in terms of getting Henry started into level two and whatnot was very effective that way.
I got into a little bit of a Twitter discourse and got sent some good videos about trap, wham, and crunch plays.
Yep.
Because I get them mixed up, frankly. And I enjoyed watching them. And of course, like every video I pulled up, it was just these beautiful runs. Like, you know, because they're always like, you know, they show you the best well executed versions. So it's just like, why don't they run this every time? It's just these beautiful holes.
That is one thing's absolutely true of any kind of offensive line analysis is you get that. So that, yeah, the wham block from Ricard early on in the game that did a great job, also did a great job of telestrating. I thought that was a good one, but it's a lot of different angles in use there. All right. We'll leave the rest of the stuff for the second hour. If you got time for this, Alex.
Yeah, sure.
Alec, I'm sorry. Tell folks where they can find your work online and contact you directly.
Sure. You can follow our show, onewinningpod.com. You can find us on Twitter, Blue Sky, Threads, all the good things, onewinningpod.com, or you know, some variant of that, you'll find it. And you feel free to reach out there. Always love to get in conversation and leave a comment on the YouTube videos too is another good way. A lot of people do that.
All right. I always appreciate you coming on, especially today. I'm sick and you jumping on really helps me kind of spread it out a little bit and not fall apart here on the air or have to be wiping my nose. I can go to mute when you're talking. And I appreciate that. Other folks out there, appreciate you listening in. Thanks. Merry Christmas. Have a happy new year coming up. Be very safe around the holidays. And one way to be entirely safe is when you don't do this in your car, but when you write us a 5-star 50-word review in your favorite podcast app, the other thing you do is hit hashtag film study mailbag. Always looking for questions. The content has been fantastic. And there's one thing also I'm trying to work on, and that is getting people who want to take the Fire Harbaugh position in particular in terms of a pros and cons list of the reason to get rid of him. And not surprisingly, perhaps so far, I've had a lot of people come to Harbaugh's defense and say, I'll do the keep Harbaugh part. Let me figure that out. I know you're out there. You make a lot of noise all the time. So don't know if you'd still be listening to the last hour of or a full hour of a show like this. But if you are, I'd love to have you on the program. One thing that's kind of interesting is there's a diverse group of people, German flock, who is putting together a very large list of pros and cons, I'll say. So if you've got a group that really likes to do this, and you want to make a pros and cons list for the group, that'd be a cool thing also. Anyway, thanks for listening. Alec, thanks again for coming on.
Happy to again.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
New year, same great savings. All in the Kroger app. Get Kroger Spiral Sliced Ham for 89 cents a pound with your card and an additional $25 purchase limit too. Then get large avocados or mangoes for 99 cents each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details. At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.